The Marion Finucane Show on RTE Radio 1 with Unpost. Mybills.ie. Help save time with bill payment online for free. Unpost. Do more.
Now, also in the Examiner today, Lorraine Gallagher talking about her very lonely Christmas without her two daughters who died by suicide, and the dreadful sadness of suicide was so often in the headlines in 2012. We just think of Shane McEntee before Christmas. We've heard from Una Butler very recently, who lost both her daughters as well when her husband took his life and theirs. Now, those are just the cases that make the headlines, because the really awful truth is that at least 10 people die by suicide every week. We've no official figures for 2012 yet, but in 2011, there were 525 officially recorded suicides. And that's probably an underestimate, because my guest this morning says around 70,000 people try to take their own lives each year. 11,000 need hospital care. Joan Freeman, Chief Executive and Founder of Pieta House, good morning to you.
Good morning, Anya.
It's a terrible statistic when you think of 70,000 people, the amount of grief, the amount of pain.
It is an awful statistic, but at the same time, when you think about all those people survive every year, and they usually survive because of the alertness of family and friends. But there is a lot of sadness out there, and we have to be aware of that.
And you've kind of spent, what, for the past 10 years, you've made this your mission pretty much, trying to do something positive about tackling the suicide problem, because we all feel so daunted by it.
It's very important, first of all, that we say that suicide is not the answer. And I would hate to normalise suicide, because it's never an option. It should never be an option. But at the same time, we've got to accept the fact that people do attempt suicide, that they do die by suicide. And by ignoring it, it means that the problem is always going to be there, but it's always going to get bigger. So by looking it in the face and being fearless, then we can do something about it. By educating people, we can alert them to maybe the triggers that might cause people to take their life. And by giving them and educating them that way, it means that we're all going to be participating in saving lives.
And you ended up on this mission because of your own sister's suicide.
10 years ago, I suppose that was part of it. 10 years ago, I was in my own private practice.
As a counsellor and psychologist.
And it was a very cosy number, really, because I could pick and choose the hours that I wanted to work. I had four children very quickly. So I would work in the mornings, especially the times that they weren't there. But I was also cosy in the people that I would help.
So a nice, happy life, everything balanced, everything the way you wanted it. You came from a happy family. No reason to think that this kind of blackness would ever come into your life.
No, and I suppose, but at the same time, I was very cautious of people who were suicidal or self-harming. And if anybody came to me who's in distress, and I'm really ashamed to admit this, but I would send them off very, very quickly to their GP or to A&E. I didn't want to have anything to do with people who were suicidal or self-harming, because as far as I was concerned, they belonged to a group of people over there who were probably mad, who had probably serious psychiatric issues. And that
there's also the fear, isn't there, of the responsibility that if you don't intervene with somebody well or deal with them the right way, that something could happen and, you know, it would be your fault nearly, would
and,
it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, like, not on my watch, but also, you know, the concept that the person might be violent towards you as well. So when it came, suicide came to our door, I couldn't believe it. It was like a free fall, where everything that you believed in, everything that you held dear to you.
What did you feel when you heard about your sister's death, when you realised it was suicide?
Well, I suppose the worst thing for me was this incredible guilt. And guilt is always there with every death. But with suicide, it's different. I mean, I think suicide is probably the worst. The loss is the worst loss you can ever go through, because with every other death, there's an explanation, whether it's cancer, whether it's a road accident, even when there's murder. But when there's suicide, there's no answer. You are left asking the terrible question, why? I remember a woman who had six children, and on the birthday of her 18th child, her oldest child, her husband took his life. And she was a remarkable woman, because she wouldn't allow her children for the first 6 months to ask the question why. It wasn't allowed in the house, that word. which allowed her children and herself to absorb the information that her husband had died.
Mm-hmm. But it is, it's such, isn't it, a way, a slap in the face for loved ones? I mean, you went on that search for why, didn't you? You wanted to find out why this had happened to your sister.
Yeah, I've often said that people tend to go one of two paths. One is that they retreat and they lick their wounds and they mourn silently, or the other path is that they go searching for questions and also go searching for a way of preventing it from happening to other families. And you can see that right across the country, all these organisations that start out of pure grief, but also for hope that this won't come to another family's door. But I suppose in my case, when I heard, and being in the profession that I'm in, I was reminded quite often by people that people would say to me, and you're a psychologist and you couldn't save her.
And had you been talking to her? Had you been aware she was distressed and talking to her as a sister, if not as a professional?
You know, the thing is, the person, the family, are usually the last people who are aware of the symptoms, because they have seen this person go through difficult times before and survive them and cope with them. So they truly believe that they're going to go through it again and survive it again. And of course, then it doesn't happen.
So were you driven by guilt?
Guilt would probably have been the most enormous emotion for many years, and probably still is to this day. And it's not guilt as in, I should have saved her life. It's the guilt as in showing no compassion and no understanding. And, you know, even, and not just with her, not just with Catherine, but also with all the people that ever came to me that might have been in distress.
Hard on yourself.
I think women are, you know, I think women are terribly hard on themselves. And I think, but it's okay to be hard on yourself, to follow up with being kind to yourself and then having an understanding of what you went through during that time. But I think it's really important for your listeners to realise that there comes a time when you start celebrating their life and stop mourning their death, and that we can survive and we are resilient and that there is hope and you will laugh again. And for many, many people across the country who have started organisations, I mean, there's something between 350 and 500 organisations across the country who are trying to do something, you know, for suicide. Unfortunately, their passion and their energy hasn't been harnessed. And what happens is that they give up.
And when you were starting to find out about suicide in the aftermath of your sister's death, what did you learn? Where did you go? What were you doing? How much time each day were you spending on it?
At the time, as I said, I had my own practice. I had to stop working immediately. I mean, I could not have counselled anybody at that time. I wouldn't have been present in the room. And my grief would have been the big elephant in the room. So I stopped working at that time, and every day, I mean, I had a computer at home, but I had no internet. And every day I would book an hour in the local library to go on their internet, to go on their computer, and I would type in the word suicide and I would see what would come up. And, you know, besides the internet being very new to me, suicide was so new to me. I didn't understand it. And looking back again, I think what I was trying to do was to see, could I blame something or somebody?
And could you?
The tragedy was, and yet, while it was tragic at the time, but it was also wonderful news now, was that I found out that suicide could be prevented.
All suicides are preventable?
Well, that's what I believe. I believe all suicides are preventable. And if I didn't believe that, Áine, I wouldn't have started Pieta House. But when I discovered that it was preventable, that's probably when the guilt then really intensified.
Because that's a pretty hard message for families of people who love people and have to cope with the fact that they've chosen this way to go. A pretty brutal way for the people left behind, that they've chosen this way to go.
But they've got to also understand, as I said, there's so much research out there that shows that the family, as I said, are the last people to see it, to see the symptoms. They also, and I'll give you an example. My daughter was studying in England, and she rang me one day, and a dear friend of hers was in trouble, was suicidal. And so she asked us to see into this person, which we did, and everything was great, and you know, that person was fine. But I remember asking her weeks later, I said, Mary, you know, if there was no Pieta house, what would you have done? And she stopped and she thought and she said, I'd have done nothing. And I said, why? And she said, because I would have hoped it would have passed. And that again reflects exactly what research has found, that we all believe this is not going to happen to our family. We all believe that it will pass. And for many, many people, it does pass. But then, of course, there are people where it doesn't pass.
So, Joan Freeman, you then got your lightning bolt moment, this idea for Pieta House. How did that come about?
I actually think this is a miraculous story, to be perfectly honest. After I discovered that suicide could be prevented, I remember, as I said, there was a bit of a free fall time for me where I became extremely low myself. And I remember lying on the bed, and I don't know why I had this book near me. I had lots of books around me, all to do with suicide, reading other people's stories.
But anyone ever tell you you were mad in the middle of this phase? I mean, it sounds like you were pretty obsessed.
Yes, absolutely obsessed. I mean, I became like an interrogator. You know, I was interrogating everybody. You know, why does this happen? You know, but in the midst of that madness, there was a great piece of logic there, trying to understand human nature and trying to understand human tragedy. And I remember this particular day, and you know what? I've never believed in light bulb moments before, but this was truly a light bulb moment. And I had been given a book a few years beforehand. I don't know why it was near me at that time, but it was a book called Your Sorrow Is My Sorrow. And it was a visual journey into seven difficult times in Our Lady's life. So one of them would have been when she lost Jesus for 3 days when he was only 12 years of age. Can you imagine the terror of that, you know? Another one was the flight out of Egypt. But then there was one which gripped me immediately, was the Pieta, which of course everybody will know, that magnificent sculpture.
Michelangelo sculpture,
yeah,
yes.
Of Mary holding the dead, broken body of her only child. And so when I saw this, the extraordinary thing was the story behind it. And if you look, and I hope people will Google the Pieta, I want them to look at the statue, this beautiful sculpture, because Michelangelo very cleverly created Mary as a bigger person than that of her son. Her shoulders are very broad. Her lap was very deep. And in fact, she was holding Jesus the same way she would have held him when he was an infant. And after all, he still was her baby.
And what did that say to you about your sister and your search for answers and, if you like, the way to go with setting up Pieta House?
Yeah, well, you know, here this woman who was in her 50s, she was holding a full adult man, but yet she was stronger and bigger. And she had an incredible serenity and acceptance on her face.
Which you craved?
It was the acceptance of a person's choice, and yet at the same time, the serenity to go and do something that would prevent other people from taking their lives. But the light bulb moment was, this woman was cradling and embracing the broken body of her son. And the light bulb moment was, we need to embrace the broken lives of people in our community.
And is it true you kind of ran out of the house and ran down the road and said, I need a house, I need a house. Is that right?
I actually got up, got dressed, even put makeup on. And I ran down to an auctioneer, Kieran Brady, who is not an auctioneer anymore. And I said to him, I need a house. And of course, I had to tell him why. I mean, this was just an immediate flashlight of an idea. And he said, what you need is a charity. You need to set up a charity. So really, that was the beginning. And I suppose the house was one part of it. But the most extraordinary part of it was that everybody believed in it. And the other extraordinary part of it was I wanted to think, what would it be like if I was in trouble or if my child was in trouble? Where would I like to bring them? And when you come to Pieta House, it's exactly like the way I was brought up at home. You know, I came from a family of eight children. And of course, there was never a biscuit in the house if someone came to see us. So immediately people were given a cup of tea and toast, whether they liked it or not. So when you come to Pieta House, whether you like it or not, you're given tea and biscuits and you're nurtured. And when they come in to be assessed, there's no clinical setting at all. A person sits on the couch and the assessor, the therapist, sits on a poofle in front of them. So we're immediately lower than the person who's coming to us.
And what was your vision? That there would be a place of safety where somebody who was feeling suicidal could go straight away?
We, I suppose if you think of it, we're at the cliff edge. We're there at the intervention. We're the alternative to A&E. We help people who either have just attempted suicide and survived, but more than likely will go on again to try and take their life. Or we help people who have the very strong desire to take their life. And of course, we help people who self-harm. So we're very focused. We're very specialised. We're experts in what we do. And it's a professional, free service that provides a therapy that is unique. And that therapy is solution-focused, strength-based. And what we realise and we are trying to get out there is that suicide can happen to anyone. That is not people with mental health issues. It is usually people who are reacting to a life event, and that life event can be anything. It can be a relationship breakup, a major loss, whether it's through death or a breakup. With men, employment, you know? And these are very real problems that people experience. But if you think about the recession, every time there's a recession, what happens is that the suicide rates increase. That's right across the world. So this actually proves our point that people react. Suicide is a reaction to a life event.
And it's one thing to kind of, you know, dream as you did that you wanted the house and you wanted this service. But how did you make that a physical reality? Because that's where things would fall down for most people.
It was extraordinary. Again, this is why I think it is miraculous. You know, we've gone through the worst recession for decades, and yet we've survived and thrived. And the reason for it is because of the people of Ireland, because the success of Pieta is not down to Joan Freeman or even her staff or the volunteers. It's actually to every person who's put a euro into a bucket, who's walked a mile for us, who believes in us, who brings people who are in distress to us. That is why we are a success. And I think Pieta is a bit like a magnet. It attracts the most extraordinary people. And they all share the same vision. They are all as passionate about Pieta as I am.
Because 80% of your budget of $2.25 million last year, 80% of that is money you raise yourselves.
Absolutely. And it's not we raise it, it's the people who raise it. And that can be anything from a child giving part of her confirmation money or to a lady, for example, who gave half her pension one time and apologised for not being able to give more. To people like, you know, there's a wonderful family, the Mulligan family, their son, Tomás Mulligan. He was a well-known Dublin footballer. Every year they have a cycle for us. And this, again, the extraordinary courage a family can go through. They've gone through absolute devastation and yet they're thinking of other people.
Yeah, but I think people want to make something good come out of all that pain, don't they? It's sometimes the only thing you can do that's there as a silver lining on, you know, such a terrible cloud coming into your life.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is turning tragedy into positive action. And, you know, we have a thing called Darkness into Light, which is in May every year. This year it's on the 11th of May. And when I think of
It's a nighttime walk, is that right?
It's at 4:30 in the morning, and just as you're crossing over the finish line, the dawn is breaking. And we have it in 22 counties this year, which is just extraordinary. But if you think about the committee, these are all volunteers who started this. And on that committee, there's a lady who's a chef, there's a lady who's a sales rep, but there's a couple who retired, Gertie and Johnny Fox, and they lost their son to suicide. And this couple, who were so devastated. They lost two sons in 1 year, one from cancer, one from suicide. Yet out of those ashes, they are the people who started Darkness into Light. Can you imagine that? And this is the most phenomenal success.
I think that's part of the problem, though, isn't it? People don't want to imagine that amount of pain in somebody else's life. It's nearly too awful to contemplate, isn't it?
I think whatever about losing someone else, you know, whether it's a partner or a sibling, to lose a child must be the most awful of all tragedies, and especially a child to suicide. Because you feel as a parent, what could you have done? And as I said, you couldn't have done anything. This is why there is a Pieta House. We can do it for you. But what we will get people to do, we will get people, we're going to launch, and I can't even call it a campaign, it will be a movement at the end of the month, to invite people to help us reduce suicide in this country.
You talk about losing a child, and again, it's the kind of thing most people just don't want to imagine. Did you get, when you looked at your own mother, having lost her daughter, your sister Catherine, did you get angry? Did you get angry at your sister? Did you get angry at God?
Actually, I remember when my father died 15 years ago, we came from a very staunch Catholic family, great believers, and thanks be to God, we still are. But I remember I was present when my dad died, and when he took his last breath, every bit of faith I had left with it. And yet when my sister died, not only did my faith come back at that moment, it came back a million times more. And in fact, to the point that when I started Pieta House, I made God our financial manager. Now, he definitely deserves a promotion because we have survived.
Certainly paid off in terms of your fundraising.
It really did.
Is it a religious organisation, Pieta House?
No, it's not. No, absolutely not. I mean, that's a very personal thing for me, my own faith. And I do have great faith. But of course, it's not religious because it has to be universal. Everybody is in trouble. You know, and anybody who's in trouble can come to us. It doesn't matter. And this is the other thing why it is such a success. We have removed as many barriers as possible. First of all, it's free. It's free of charge. We don't even ask for a donation.
Which is really important because a lot of people, you know, might know they need help, but kind of be, where am I going to get the therapy? We saw already the figures about the mental health monies that went into paying down the health deficit last year. So people can get scared that they might not be able to afford help if they need it.
Absolutely. And, you know, sometimes when you go for help and if you can afford it, it's like a small mortgage, especially in crisis. You can't see a person once a week. You have to see them at least minimum twice a week. And more often if they are at high risk. But what we've done in Pieta House, I mean, we're open at this moment in Pieta House. This is Saturday morning. We're open tomorrow morning. We'll be open on bank holiday Mondays. And that is why it works.
It's about being there when the need arises.
Exactly.
How quickly can somebody get in if it is a crisis?
Well, we have two emergency slots every day, first of all, right across. We have five centres, four in Dublin, one in Limerick. By the end of spring, early summer, we will have another four centres, which will be covering about another 12 counties. So we're trying to spread that right across the country. And our aim is to have a service within 100 kilometres of every single person in Ireland.
Do you really think that? I bet you think that's really achievable, don't you? You're really determined about that.
Of course it is. Absolutely. And it will be. It will happen within the next 12 to 18 months. There's no two ways about it. But the other barriers we remove, besides that it being free of charge, is that anybody can pick up the phone and make that call. A mother can pick up the phone and talk about her child. A husband can pick up the phone and talk about his wife and make the appointment. Because if you think about it, Áine, if you fell and broke your leg, nobody would expect you to get up, pick up the phone and get yourself into hospital. So why should we expect anybody who's broken to get themselves some help? We must do it for them.
There's a call in listening to your interview with Joan Freeman. When is Pieta House opening in Galway?
It's a lovely story about Galway. I don't know if you know about it. We were the recipient of the secret millionaire, John Kincannon, who has driven
big supporter of you,
the opening of Pieta in Galway. And what has happened is we have this this house, which is given to us rent free for the next 3 years. It's a shell at the moment. But the people of Tuam, whether they're material suppliers or tradespeople, are coming to fit out and complete that house for us free of charge. Now, that's a real community spirit. So with the help of God, we're going to be open by March. We've already got planning permission to you know, for a change of use and to make the alterations. And work is starting now in the next week or so.
Just in terms of suicide itself, you spoke about men and the recession. Men are the biggest risk group.
Of course they are. They're the biggest risk group anyway. You mentioned a figure, a preliminary figures of 525 for 2011. I would truly believe you could double that figure. Because you've got to remember the real figure. But drownings are not included in this. There are many, many deaths, whether a person dies in a car accident and it was deliberate, or other deaths that are not included in it. You know, there, I remember a couple of years ago, there were four counties in Ireland where it was reported that there were no suicides, which was ridiculous. But at the same time, you can understand because of the stigma, because of the sensitivity that, you know, maybe misadventure or accidental death was given instead.
So, do you understand? I mean, even in your own family, it's a sensitive issue. Talking about, you know, the circumstances in public, people are so horrified, are so guilty. There's so much pain involved. It can be hard to kind of stand up in front of the world and say, yes, it was suicide, can't it?
Of course it is. Absolutely. Because, again, the guilt part is playing the biggest part. You know, what could I have done to prevent that? But if you think of those figures, Áine, you know, and if we take 525 as that figure, 485 of those were men, 40 were women. So that means for every female that died, 12 men took their lives. That is the most frightening figure of all. And we have to do something about it.
We're trying very hard. Do you think men are getting the message? Are we getting through to, obviously not enough, to enough men around the place?
Well, I think there's a very simple truth that we've got to understand and accept. And that is men won't ask for help. They just won't. Ask for help. Even something as basic. Have you ever been in a car with a man who won't ask for directions and we're lost? I mean, there's a lovely story I often say about, you know, this thing about men not asking for directions or for help. This isn't a new thing. I mean, if you go back to the Bible, do you remember that story where Moses brought his children of Israel to the promised land? But while he was doing it, they were wandering around the desert for 40 years. So it just shows even then men didn't ask for help.
And it's not just men. The past year really brought this to the fore. Teenagers, children committing suicide. And is that different to adults? Do you think it's a different phenomenon or what's
absolutely.
Going on?
Absolutely. I mean, first of all, remember a child's brain is still developing. You know, up until past 18. So they don't understand the concept of suicide. I keep saying that they don't understand the fatality and finality of death. Mm-hmm. And when they see the dramatic consequences of a suicide around them, and because they're very dramatic in teen years, and because they're very impulsive in teen years, it makes them very susceptible to suicide. So it is a different type. It's obviously it's a very different death, but we would see more under 18s would be coming to us for self-harm, and again this is something that people have no concept of and don't understand.
And this is what, like cutting your arms, cutting your wrists?
It could be lots of things. It could be cutting, absolutely. It could be punching. It could be pulling hair. It could be throwing yourself down the stairs. It could be, I remember a young man who had 23, went to hospital with 23 injuries at different times.
And self-inflicted injuries.
Broken fingers or broken wrist. And they were all self-inflicted. And they never copped it in the hospital because young guys could be in a fight or it could be a sporting injury. But this poor, unfortunate guy was hurting himself. Yeah. But again, it's important for people to understand why a child would self-harm. There's nothing wrong with them. What's wrong is that they can't communicate their distress. So their body becomes like a blank canvas. And the scars and the wounds are telling their own stories.
And it can be a desperate situation for parents who are worried about a child and awake every night, not daring to go to sleep until that child has gone to sleep because they're afraid of what the child might do on impulse.
Absolutely.
In the early hours of the morning. It can really be a dreadful situation. What about Facebook? Because there's been a lot, and social media, a lot of talk about all of this in terms of two things, the kind of bullying that can trigger self-harm through, you know, abuse of social media contacts and the fact that it's there kind of 24/7. And the other thing then is the way when somebody does die, does commit suicide, especially for young people, that it can almost romanticise it, you know, keep me a seat in heaven, babes, and all those kind of messages. Yeah. What's your view of both sides of that?
Well, first of all, of course, social media, Facebook, all those sites are can be two things. It can be positive and negative. I mean, you know, you will also hear on Facebook that some people have got help through other people, you know, and have messaged that. But you've got to also remember that bullying has always been around. It doesn't matter whether it's online or face-to-face, it has always been around. And again, this is something that we're trying to say to people, and especially to children, that, you know, I'll give you a case example. I remember a young boy, he was about 14, he had attempted to hang himself twice, and we found out that it was because of bullying. But his problem wasn't with the bully. It was the fact that his friends did nothing about it. So what we're trying to do is to get children to break that code of secrecy and to be able to say, look, my friend's in trouble. Because children would make
the
grade.
They're at an age as well when they kind of think adults mightn't understand their feelings.
Yeah. I keep saying they would make the greatest secret agents because they really do have a code of secrecy. A
couple of calls. Can Pieta House help atheists or agnostics? This is from Paul in Leakslip. There seems to be a heavy emphasis on God. Do you offer a more secular approach, which Paul is saying he prefers?
There's no religion at all in our service. And I'm sorry if that came across that it seemed to be.
Well, I have to say, most of the calls are just singing your praises. The honesty, this is from Ella, of your guest is honourable. As someone who has trained in psychology, I watched in my training as many avoided issues like suicide, child abuse and incest. Surely it's time we question these subjects and how we cover these topics
in
training.
That's exactly it. You know, I keep thinking about, if you think about suicide as a vessel and we fractured it, and that fracture will allow light in. And that's what we've got to do. We've got to let the light in and help people out of the dark.
You're a remarkable woman for somebody who just wanted to kind of leave school, get a job, get married and have your kids, which you did.
I did, yeah. Can you believe that? And, you know, I mean, my daughter, who's 27, she's exactly the same. She's a fabulous teacher. But she wants to get married and have children. And, you know, so what? It's a wonderful ambition. It's a wonderful career, if you want to call it that, and a wonderful way of living.
Well, Person of the Year 2011, Olympic torch carrier in 2012, and I don't know what you've got lined up for yourself in 2013.
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. My only aim for 2013 is to reduce male suicides.
Well, fair play to you on that and good luck to you with it, Joan. And thank you so much for coming in. Joan Freeman, Chief Executive and founder of Pieta House. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
1850 715 150.